You're listening to the Cat Breeder Sensei Says podcast. This is your show host, April Catito. And if you're ever wondering when to take your cat to the emergency room versus waiting until your regular vet is open, maybe the next business day or on Monday, then this episode is for you. We're going to be interviewing Dr. Jennifer Vinsel, and she is going to tell us the top five reasons to take your cat to the emergency room and when to be concerned during labor and delivery of your queen, right after this short message.
Do you want to learn how to become a successful breeder of pedigree cats? Now you can. For the first time ever, enroll in an online training course that takes you step by step through everything you need to know to get on the right track. Visit catbreedersensei.com to sign up today and use code podcast21 to get $25 off.
Awesome. So I have on the show today a very special guest. It is Dr. Jennifer Vinsel from Shoreline Veterinary Hospital. Thank you, Dr. Jen, for being here on the show with me today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yes, anytime. She's actually going to share with us the top five reasons to take your cat to the emergency room. So I was just talking to Jen before the show, and we were talking about, like, if you're not familiar with the signs to look for, you may panic and think that you have to take your cat to the emergency room. We're talking about, like, after hours when your vet isn't open, or the weekend emergency room visits that they can get very expensive if, you know, you're taking your cat there and maybe they end up keeping them overnight, or, you know, the scenarios definitely vary. But so we wanted to talk about when there are actually times when you might want to consider taking your cat to the ER if you see some of the conditions or symptoms that we're going to talk about today. And then we're also going to cover if your queen is in labor and some signs to look for there, something that will constitute an emergency. So without further ado, I'm excited because we love to educate the breeders and help them understand, like, you know, what they're dealing with. There's a lot of things that go on with our cats. So let's start with the very first one. Take it away, Dr. Jen.
Okay. So being cat owners, I think probably, you know, most people listening to this are familiar with cats in a condition that is very specific to cats. And that's when they become blocked as far as their urinary tract. It's like a urinary blockage. We don't know why this happens. In fact, in a lot of cats, we think there's some correlation to stress, but not always. We can't always identify a stress component to it. Certainly stones and bladder infections and things like that can contribute to it too. But more often than not, it is an idiopathic condition where the urinary tract gets really, really inflamed and basically swollen shut. So the cat can't pee or urinate. And some of the telltale signs of this would be, you know, in and out of the litter box, you know, howling, crying, straining to urinate, nothing coming out, likely urinating outside of the box and seeing blood in the urine. But specifically, this can really become a life-threatening emergency. It's probably one of the most common ones we see. And really unblocking that urinary tract, time is of the essence. So this is one where if you see this behavior, you really need to get your cat to the vet, to the emergency clinic, even if it's, you know, 2 a.m. So we can, you know, place a urinary catheter and relieve that blockage because their bladders can just get huge. Their kidney values, actually, they can get kidney damage from this. It can be really, really serious.
It happens really fast too, doesn't it? Like,
yeah, I mean, it does. If you can imagine, you know, not being able to urinate, you know, even for, you know, 12, 13 hours. I mean, how much, you know, pain and discomfort you would be in and how sick you could get, you know, how quickly. So it really can come on quickly. You know, a lot of times there's, you know, a little straining, you know, maybe the blood in the urine starts first, you know, they're still able to urinate, but, you know, you're seeing that blood and they're peeing outside the box for a day or two, but it can rapidly develop into a full-on blockage if not addressed. And so, you know, if you're seeing no urine produced at all in the box and your cat is just, again, very uncomfortable, you know, look, you know, I always talk about, you know, you have to look at the patient too. You know, if he's, you know, if they're peeing outside the box, but acting totally normal, you know, that's probably not a reason to rush into the emergency clinic. But when you start to see that, you know, crying and just, you know, pacing in and out of the box, can't get comfortable, you know, all they can think about is trying to pee. You know, you really need to get them in right away. So I think that's probably the most common one we see, honestly. And it's typically middle-aged male cats are the number one, you know, kind of demographic we see that in. Females actually don't block very often. In fact, it's because their urethras are so much shorter than male cats. And so this is almost exclusively a male cat problem. And particularly, again, middle-aged cats. We don't see it as much in older cats. It can happen, but middle-aged, you know, young to middle-aged male cats, number one pet we would see this in.
Do you think there's something that cat owners can do to prevent that? Like, you know, I know like maybe feeding canned foods, you know, specifically, or a special diet just to make sure that, I mean, there's no way to prevent it entirely, but something that can help.
Yes, there's a lot of different things that we talk about. It's hard because we don't know why it happens. So sometimes it's hard to, you know, definitely prevent it if we don't know why it's occurring. But again, there's a lot of indication that it's related to stress. Usually when we look back on a case like this, almost always the owner can think of something, you know, that maybe changed in the environment. You know, maybe they got a new dog, or they went on a trip, or, you know, they were moving their furniture around or remodeling. Even a, you know, cat outside the house that your cat is seeing through the window that, you know, there is stressing them out, those kind of things. So anything you can do to relieve stress in the environment is a huge, you know, preventative for this situation. And then canned diets and increasing the water in the cat's diet really can help too, because it keeps that urine as dilute as possible and keeps them, you know, urinating rather than having this very strong concentrated urine. You've got a nice dilute, healthy urine. And since cats aren't great water drinkers, canned diets are a great way to do that. Of course, cat water fountains may help as well. And then there's lots of different urinary prescription diets out there that are meant to help keep crystals from forming in their urine as well. Because a lot of these guys can actually block because of just lots of crystals and kind of these little plugs that develop within their urethra. Not necessarily a full-on stone, but just all those crystals kind of stuck together can cause it to get blocked more easily. So those diets can help.
Mm-hmm. So they can actually put their cats on the diet before they get the crystals, like as a means to prevent it?
Yeah, you know, and not every cat is going to need that, obviously. But if you have had a cat, you know, even who's maybe just had that first stage of this, you know, maybe where you've just had a cat who's, you know, had some bloody urine before, you know, maybe they haven't blocked completely. That might be a good, you know, cat to have on one of those diets as a preventative, or, you know, maybe he's had a lot of urination outside of the box. You know, again, that might be your first clue that he's kind of, you know, prone to this type of thing. So yeah, certainly some cats go on it before they ever get blocked. And then many, you know, once they've blocked, they go on this diet for life afterwards to try to prevent it in the future. And because it can recur, you know, there's some cats that this can happen to multiple times. And there's actually a surgery to shorten that male urethra. It's essentially turning them into a female, but it can help to prevent blockages. We usually don't do that unless they've had, we kind of say there's like a three strike rule. So if the cat's had, you know, three episodes of this, we kind of say, you know, this surgery really is going to be needed to try to prevent this, you know, from happening a fourth time, because it just gets really expensive and obviously painful and stressful for the cat too.
Right. Wow. Good tips. That's good tips to help prevent that condition. I know several people that have lost cats from that specific condition. And I had a male cat, had the same thing, that, you know, was on a special diet after we treated, he actually had the crystals. Mm-hmm. Good tips. Thank you for that. All right. What about, number two, labored breathing?
Yeah. So I think we can all agree, you know, if you've ever seen a cat open mouth breathing, it is a scary thing to see. And that's something that is not normal. You know, we do not see cats panting, you know, like you would a dog. So if you see, you know, an open mouth breathing, your cat is panting like a dog would, looking, even, you know, just rapid breathing, and you're kind of, one thing to look for would be to kind of lift up the gums and see, you know, if they're nice and pink, or are they looking blue? You know, that can be a sign of poor oxygenation or pale. And you're seeing that rapid breathing or open mouth breathing, that's a very urgent situation, you know, to get them right away to the emergency clinic. This can happen from things like feline asthma. It can happen from heart disease, congestive heart failure. a different, you know, anything, you know, any kind of respiratory or cardiac disease in cats can actually cause this. So definitely, you know, they may need oxygen. That can be a really, again, time is of the essence thing. I would not wait, you know, for my vet to open in the morning if this was happening. Right. So labor breathing is a big one.
Do you think, I mean, sometime, not often, but sometimes you'll see, I know I see it occasionally, like if it's hot, you know, like if they're in the outdoor enclosure, I'll see them out there panting. I've even seen one like traveling in a car that was kind of stressed, that was you know, breathing like that. So
that's a good point. You know, definitely situations like that, you know, if you know, you know, and again, I think that kind of goes back to, you know, looking at the patient, like before you got in the car, was that cat totally fine, you know, eating, drinking and acting him, you know, his total normal self, you know, we're pretty sure it's, you know, the stress of the car ride, you know, probably not an urgent visit, still good to maybe try to de-escalate that situation the best you can, you know, and try to calm that cat down and get him kind of more relaxed as quick as you can. And same thing, you know, with heat. But yeah, I think those are definitely two situations where you're right. We do see them sometimes kind of open mouth breathing, which again, it's not a, probably not something to rush into the emergency clinic for, but maybe try to start thinking of how we can get them to either cool down or calm down.
Okay. All right. All right. Number three, we have vomiting, not able to hold the food down and, or not eating for more than 24 hours. Let's talk about that, because cats vomit. they throw up hairballs and goodies and all kinds of things that they, you know, love to leave little vomit piles on the floor. But, you know, then you have to be able to differentiate when it's actually an emergency. Like this isn't the normal cat vomit.
Exactly. This one can be much more of a gray area. You know, I think the first two are a little bit more, you know, black and white, you know, when you see these things, you need to take them. Vomiting, I think I see this all the time. You know, I'll get to work in the morning and I'll see somebody, you know, went to the emergency clinic the night before because their cat threw up once, you know, and I always feel like, you know, that maybe could have waited, you know, especially if the cat is still eating fine, you know, acting a totally normal, you know, one episode of vomiting, I'm not, you know, rushing to the emergency clinic for that. But if, you know, not interested in food and it's going on for a whole day, and then anything it does try to eat, you know, not even able to hold anything, you know, vomiting up all the water. Those are more, you know, serious, where I would, you know, recommend getting them somewhere. Cats can get a condition with their liver called hepatic lipidosis. If they go too long without calories, you know, without getting any kind of food or caloric intake. And so that's why I said, you know, I really wouldn't let a kitty go for more than about 24 hours before getting that addressed. Cause you can get, they can kind of get into a vicious cycle where their liver starts to have issues the longer that goes on, and then they feel worse and are less likely to eat. And, you know, we end up really having to be really aggressive with that kind of treatment. So sometimes getting them seen quicker, you know, might allow them to be treated a little less aggressively, you know, as an outpatient, and get them feeling better before they get that sick. So yeah, I think, you know, one episode of vomiting, an episode of diarrhea, even, you know, GI upset in general, you know, again, if the cat's acting fine, you know, still interested in food, bright and active, purring, you know, still doing all their normal things. I'm not really saying I think we need to rush that cat to the emergency clinic, but, you know, if they're just not acting themselves and you're offering food and they're not interested, you know, that day, that's a time where I would say I would get them seen sooner rather than later. You know, I know you've had a case like that recently too, and, you know, just how sick they can get. And, you know, again, how aggressive sometimes we end up needing to be for those guys, you know, after a certain point. So,
and I'm thinking about, you know, while we're talking about these first three, I'm thinking, you know, the better you know your cat, then you know when something's wrong. You know, that's, I always tell people, like, you know, watch the body language and get to know like the normal behavior of your cat so that you will know when something is wrong. They tell you in, you know, more ways than one when there's something that is not right. And if they, you know, I have one that throws up hairballs and I have a scarf and barfer. So, you know, like occasionally, no matter what, he just eats really fast and then he throws up. You got to know your cat and say, okay, that's not normal vomiting. That's, I'm going to, you know, that's something that might trigger you to say, to know that something else is going on other than the normal stuff.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm the same way with my pets. I mean, I know if I don't put down, you know, if I put down food and they're not right at the bowl, you know, that's just not my cat, you know, my pet's personality, you know, yeah. I know
they're not. Yes. Like, where are they? They always right here. First thing, something must be wrong.
Right. But there might be, you know, some pets out there that are more grazers, you know, and so again, you know, they don't eat that, if they don't eat breakfast that morning, you know, that just might be their normal. So I'm not, you know, stressed about that, but it's kind of that, like I said, when they're actively acting, you know, like they don't feel well, you know, not holding anything down. We just don't want them to get super dehydrated and start to have that hepatic lipidosis issue. Again, that's a bit more specific to cats. Cats are weird. You know, they get some things that dogs don't. So that's one of those, again, kind of cat only things that we worry about. So
cats are weird. It's so weird. Okay. Let's go to number four. That's probably my favorite thing to say too. Cats are weird. Like when I have, you know, people that have one of my kittens and they say, hey, he's doing this or doing that. Have you ever heard of it? I'm like, no, but cats are weird and they do weird stuff. And they're so hard to figure out. All right, number four, you have squinting the eye. So that's
might sound weird to some people, but I, you know, I remember when I was in vet school and the oncologist or the ophthalmologist rather, you know, they would always say, you know, a red eye is an emergency. And obviously, you know, they only have two eyes. And, you know, so if you see your cat, you know, squinting your eye, you know, there is a chance they could have something like a corneal ulcer, which is kind of like a wound on, you know, the actual surface of the eye. And that cornea, you know, that outer surface of the eye is actually very, very thin. And so it does not take much of a wound of an ulcer, which they can get even, you know, from something like feline herpes virus, which most cats have or carry, you know, are carriers of. So it's something we see very commonly in cats. So they don't necessarily have to have trauma to the eye. They can just have an eye infection that can lead to this. But squinting of the eye could be a sign of a corneal ulcer or again, a wound on the eye. And if that very thin layer, you know, is completely damaged, they could rupture, their eye could rupture and they could be at risk for losing it. So in my mind, if you have a red squinty eye, that should not wait. Cause that can again, just be, you know, time is really important in those cases to get it treated. Cause I'd hate to see, you know, you kind of sit and wait on it for a day and then, you know, you're end up, you know, with it taking the eye out is, you know, could be the only option. So squinting eye, red eye, you know, and again, eye discharge, I think that's the difference here, you know, a little goop in the eye, you know, again, I'm not super worried, but when your pet's, you know, really holding it closed, you know, it's really, really red, you know, normally you can see, you know, the whites of our, you know, the cat's eyes. If you're looking at that white part and it's just fire engine red, that's an emergency, you know, you need to get them seen right away.
How often do you think that, you know, cats like to box each other and hit each other in the eyes and face and stuff? I mean, how often do you think that eye injuries are caused from that? I mean, do they really catch each other in the eye? Do you think that is common?
Yeah. I mean, I think it is quite common, you know, definitely trauma is probably half of it. And like I said, the other half of the time it can be from things like eye infections and, you know, again, feline herpes is probably the top one I think of. So, you know, dogs, I think are a bit more, maybe they're not as smart as cats. I don't know. I feel like we see them a bit more for like running into stuff, you know, they're running into sticks and stuff out in the yard. I don't feel like we see that as much with cats, but definitely cat fighting, you know, wounds, can cause that kind of eye trauma and damage.
For the record, cats are smarter than dogs.
They are. So I've even seen, you know, itchy pets, you know, if they're really rubbing their eyes because they've been scratching or itching, you know, they can actually do it themselves, you know, by constantly scratching and rubbing their eye.
Okay. All right. And number five, trauma.
Yeah, this one, you know, if you have a cat with known trauma, you know that they just got into a fight, you know, with another cat outside or hit by a car or, you know, fell from some distance, you know, even, you know, most of these times you're going to have outward signs that, you know, you need to bring them into the emergency clinic. But sometimes I think my point here is, you know, you never know what could be going on internally in those cases. You know, sometimes you could have very minimal trauma on the outside, but on the inside, you can have a really serious condition. So I think getting them looked at in these cases, you know, for example, you could have a cat that was in a cat fight and, you know, maybe you just see some, you know, puncture wounds, you know, on their chest and, you know, belly. But if any of those wounds actually went, you know, all the way through, you know, their chest wall, you could be at risk for, you know, getting air, you know, they could be getting air or fluid built up around their lungs and have a, you know, then they could start developing a hard time breathing. So getting that looked at sooner rather than later is good. Same thing being, you know, hit by a car, even if, you know, obviously you're probably going to have a lot more outward signs of trauma with that, but, you know, just getting them looked at to make sure there's no, you know, signs of internal bleeding, that kind of thing, I think is important. I've even seen, you know, like a BB, I've seen a little, what we thought was like a BB gunshot kind of thing to a cat. You know, again, you've got a very small little wound on the outside, but what could be going on the inside really needs to be looked at as soon as possible.
I would definitely say, you know, the trauma, that might be probably the easiest decision to make when to, you know, go to the ER is, oh my gosh, got hit by a car. Like, don't wait. Yeah. That would definitely go into the ER.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to switch gears. We're going to completely, that was kind of like general overall for every cat, even, you know, every cat owner can apply those top five reasons to, you know, take your cat to be seen promptly if you notice any of those symptoms. But we're going to switch gears now and talk to the breeders. Talk about what is an emergency with your queens during delivery. So I know this is probably, you know, for our listeners is the most nerve-wracking, especially if you're new and, you know, you're delivering your first or second or third, you know, litter and waiting on babies. And it's nerve-wracking. I mean, it is. And you don't know, like, what's going on and what she should be doing. And, you know, is everything okay? It's just, I remember, you know, my first litter, and I actually lost the very first kitten that was born because of dystocia. And, you know, had some guidelines, you know, I probably could have saved that kitten, but it just went too long. And, you know, the kitten didn't make it. It was in the birth canal too long. And so I wish I'd have had some guidelines written down for like when to go, you know, and what to look for and some things that are warning signs that the queen might need some assistance from the vet. So that's what we're going to cover now. Some tips for helping you deliver your litters of kittens, you know, until you can understand what is actually an emergency. All right. So we're going to talk about prolonged interval between the birth of kittens. So like, you know, how much time elapses between kittens, you know, when should you start thinking about taking your mama to the ER?
Yeah. So, you know, number one, I just, you know, thinking about this, you know, it's always nice to know if possible, I like to know how many kittens they're going to, you know, we're expecting. So, you know, if you've had the cat x-rayed before, you know, that's always a nice thing just because you can know, okay, I know we're going to have four, you know, kittens or five kittens, you know, coming. So kind of having that number in your head, you know, just to know what to expect. But I think the key here is if, you know, your cat is in, you know, active labor and, you know, has produced a kitten, but then, you know, 4 to 6 hours, you know, have gone by and you're not seeing any more kittens and, you know, you're still seeing, you know, active labor, you know, again, that those contractions and straining, that is definitely an emergency, you know, to get that cat seen. She may need, you know, potentially oxytocin, you know, medications to help, you know, get those kittens out, you know, even a C-section, but yeah, definitely prolonged interval between the birth of kittens is important. And then, you know, again, just knowing how many they have is ideal, because, you know, if they've had three and that's all you've seen, you know, kind of before, maybe you can rest a little easy if, you know, time's kind of going by and nothing's happening.
Yeah. So I got an x-ray. I've got an x-ray done a couple of times just to see like how I felt about knowing how many kittens the queen had. And that's very, very true that if I know to expect four kittens, then once the four kittens are here, I can relax. I'm like, okay, she's done. I don't have to, you know, wonder if there's any more in there. I can also like probe around and once she gets down to one or two kittens, you can feel them in there. You can actually feel the kittens still inside. And, you know, I always check to, you know, if she's just laying there and I think that she's done, I just check her to see, you know, if I think any other kittens are in there. But an x-ray is kind of a mind really. I mean, it's just put your mind at ease once you know that all the kittens have made it out. Relax.
An x-ray is not foolproof, but it's pretty good. I mean, usually we're pretty capable. I mean, if we're x-raying them after those kittens have mineralized, where you can actually see their skeletons, you know, most of the time we're able to count pretty accurately. And, you know, unless they're really overlapping each other, it can, you know, be a little tricky sometimes, but it really does give you a good idea.
I think that's somewhere like around day 45 into the pregnancy, you can actually see the skeletons of the kittens and count, you know, you can count spines and stuff after day 45. So if you guys are wondering, you know, when you can actually do that, before that, you can do a sonogram instead of an x-ray. But I don't know, I think just
it's harder to count them with a sonogram, you know, with the ultrasound, you can see, you know, heartbeats and stuff a little better with that. But I find it a lot harder to actually count the kittens with an ultrasound. So I think for quantifying them, x-ray is much more effective. But yeah, I mean, I think also, you know, this point goes back to, you know, looking at the patient. I mean, if the cat's like, you know, if the queen is just relaxing and, you know, not stressed or distressed, you know, that's important too. I mean, even if you don't know how many kittens she has, you know, if she's had four kittens and then, you know, you're not seeing any signs of distress from her. And again, you know, your cat well, then I'm, you know, again, I think you're probably okay. But if you're just, you can tell she's not feeling well, that's more alarming.
Okay. Stage two labor lasting longer than 24 hours. Maybe just touch on what stage two labor is and, you know, when to worry.
Yeah. So stage two labor is, you know, actively, you know, expelling the fetuses, you know, so if they are, you know, actively trying to, you know, birth these kittens, having abdominal contractions, you know, that is definitely a cause for concern. Typically the first fetus is delivered within 60 minutes of the start of that stage. So the first sign you're going to see is some clear vaginal discharge. And then, you know, they're going to start having these contractions and, you know, and trying to expel these fetuses. So you should start to see within the first 60 minutes, you know, that first kitten born. And then typically after that, you know, again, if it's everything's going totally normal, you know, following the textbook, you know, it would be every 30 to 60 minutes after that.
Yep.
So
I concur.
Yeah.
Sometimes I just plop them out like 1 minute and here comes one. And then 2 minutes later, there's another one.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it is 30 minutes or, you know, typically you wait about 30 minutes in between each kitten. Okay. Next we have fetal membranes or part of the fetus protruding from the vagina for longer than 15 minutes without progress. And this is what I was referring to on my very first kitten that was delivered. It was in the birth canal too long. That was a very typical dystocia. What might we look for? Like, what do you mean fetal membranes?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're seeing, you know, the birth sac, you know, tissue, you know, even a leg, but, you know, nothing else, you know, not the whole kitten, you know, and it's really stuck in the birth canal. That's really, really an emergency, you know, not only for that kitten, hopefully to survive, but also for the queen. So yeah,
for longer than 15 minutes.
Right. So that, I mean, having, you know, a plan in place of what, you know, getting to the emergency clinic as quick as you can, God forbid, if it's after hours, you know, or your regular, if it was during, you know, business hours, if that were to happen.
Honey, they always want to have kittens at after hours. They always want to go like 9 p.m. to 3 a.m. So if that's an emergency room, I'm just kidding. And not always, but most of the time.
Yeah.
I've seen legs, like, you know, just for a few minutes. I'm like, oh my gosh, come on. There's just a leg. Hey, that would be, you know, breach, or the head's just there for, it seems like forever. What, you know, when you're waiting for the next contraction and the kitten to come out. So I say, you know, definitely when you see the presentation of a kitten, you know, start, just look at your clock and, you know, keep track and say, okay, this has been too long. And I got a question, like, what do you think if they, let's say the mom has already delivered two kittens and then we have dystocia, you should load up her and her babies and bring them to the emergency room, or do you just bring the mom? I mean, what do you suggest in that case?
I would bring the mom and the babies, because you know, at that point, I don't think you don't know how long she could be there. You know, I think those kittens need to be with their mom in case, you know, it could be an extended time, you know, hopefully not, but yeah, I would bring them too. You know, in that way, you know, even they could get looked at and just make sure they're okay.
Right.
So it's always hard because dystocia, you know, when they're in labor, I mean, obviously keeping everything as less stressful, you know, really the ideal situation for that is to be in a calm, you know, quiet, mm-hmm. you know, situation.
Dark.
And so dark. I mean, you don't really want to be messing with them when they're in labor. So, you know, it is hard to know, like, when do I need to start intervening? Because, you know, if you intervene for no reason, you know, maybe everything's normal, but you're just kind of panicking, you know, you could actually delay things. You could accidentally delay things just by doing that. So you really want to be sure, as sure as you can, that you do need to bring them in, before you start disrupting, you know, the normal kind of birthing process.
Yes. Yes. And I like the warning signs that you're giving us, because cats in general deliver kittens very easily. I mean, these aren't some things that, you know, are common, but they do come up. And I like to just leave the moms alone personally and not dig around in there. I know some people like cut cords and do all kinds of things. And I think it's better to let nature take its course and just make sure that everything's going well before you panic. But cats in general are very good deliverers of their babies. And most of the time we don't have to worry. But there's always, you know, there's always instances where something could go wrong. All right. And the last one is the presence of green discharge without the production of a kitten within 15 minutes. What would that be an indicator of?
So the reason that one's on there is because that could be a sign of placental, basically if the placenta is detaching. And so that would be a worry, that if that placenta has detached from the, you know, from the uterus, you know, those kittens are in jeopardy if they are not, you know, getting, you know, a C-section, for example, or they're not birthed within even 30 minutes of that, they could die. And so, you know, getting them seen right away, if you see that green discharge and then no kittens are being produced for 15 minutes, you know, getting her seen as quickly as possible could save those kittens. But that's a really, again, time is just really, really important in that case. So being aware of that, but that's what that would indicate, would be a placental detachment.
Awesome. Awesome advice. Yeah. I got a question about the placentas too. So we should count placentas. For every kitten, there should be one placenta. What is it an emergency if we see a kitten, but we don't see a placenta? Is that an emergency room visit, or can that wait until the next day?
I think that can wait until the next day. Again, I think that goes, again, you know, looking at your patient, looking at the cat, you know, again, if she's birthed all the kittens, you know, not actively in distress and acting totally normal, I think that can wait till the next day.
Awesome. Well, Dr. Jen, awesome advice for everything that we've talked about today, the top five reasons to take your cat to the ER. Hopefully people will make a little sticky note and put it in their refrigerator and not panic. I mean, the whole purpose of this is I don't want people to panic if they, you know, if they see something and they're not really familiar with it, you know? So I was hoping to bring some awareness to what is an emergency and what can wait to see your primary veterinarian, you know, until the next business day when they're open. So I appreciate so much of you to take the time to, you know, talk with me today and share your knowledge. You're, as always, very knowledgeable and willing to share that with me. So thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right. We'll talk to you next time. I've got some more topics.
Okay. Sounds good.